Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your elated host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Confused. We weren't even supposed to pod tonight. Chris Middleton drops 40 points. The Bucks win. Nikias once again has a white tank top on, so we got white tank top energy going for, I think, the fourth or fifth consecutive pod. I guess this has replaced his trips to Atlanta. the hashtag is Big Tank, folks.
Big Tank. Okay.
Big Tank. And no, I'm excited to go. Thanks for embracing your bounce. Welcome, Dunkers. What a game. 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 What a game.
I, for one, agree that it was a great game. Happy to be here. Appreciate you rocking with me as always, Mr. Jones Jr.
We're going to have one of those nights. All right.
What do you mean?
All right. Let me get my water.
Well, the people are here. The Bucks did get a 109-103 victory over the Phoenix Suns to tie the series up 2-2. Pat Connaughton was a game high plus 21 tonight, which I feel should lead the discussion. A lot of timely rebounds, some timely three-pointers made, particularly in the second half of this game. But why am I already getting the – what is this? What's happening?
Now, you got me with KZ Akpala last pod and your plus-minus stat. I will not make the same mistake twice.
You're not slandering Pat Connaughton for his timely –
No, he's been great. He's hitting big threes. I'm not leading this game with Pat Connaughton talk. No, I'm not doing that. That block that Giannis had, we saw this man's knee bend in a way it should never have bent. And here he is making one of the most incredible plays in NBA Finals history defensively. I don't know how he did it. I still don't know how he did it. And how are you not leading this with Chris Middleton?
I'm trying to work my way into it, you know, because like if it was up to me, I would just go on to Chris Middleton rant and that would just be the pod. But we actually have to talk about the game. So I want to ease into it with some actual basketball talk first. I will victory lap later.
Go ahead, man. I'll go to bed. That's fine. Go ahead. Nice. Bucks played hard. Suns got to figure some things out. Devin Booker. Woo, buddy. Okay. All right.
That is not going to be the analysis for the pod tonight. Absolutely not. But
yeah, you want to talk about Chris Paul to start?
So Jrue Holiday played some really good defense tonight. Missed a lot of layups in the meantime. But no, Chris Middleton was freaking fantastic tonight. I think that's the headline. Even beyond the ridiculous Giannis. Actually, before I even get into that, the Giannis block was incredible. Are you taking the Giannis block over the Bam over Tatum block from last year?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Are you taking the Giannis block over the LeBron chase down on Andre Iguodala in 16?
No.
Hmm. Okay.
Because of the history and what went down in that game. Can't beat that one. But it's right next to it.
It's up there.
They're in the same vehicle. I don't know how close, but
Tayshaun on Reggie in 04, I want to say.
A tremendous block, but I'm taking the honest one.
Okay.
Higher stakes.
All right. Just wanted to gauge where you were with the block. But man, the shot making from Chris Middleton tonight almost didn't matter who defended him. Had the pull up going. Timely three pointers made, some timely drives. I don't know how Devin Booker didn't foul out on the last bucket that he made on the fast break. Speaking of which, the spacing on that fast break was terrible to me. Anyway, if there was anyone aside from Devin Booker defending that 3-on-1, that's probably a missed shot or a turnover. But doesn't matter. Chris finishes through contact. Devin Booker, once again, does not get his sixth foul. Just a weird officiating game in general. Because they let him play, and then they didn't let him play, and then they let him play again. It's just kind of whatever. Anyway, 40 ball for Chris Middleton in the NBA Finals game. I don't want to hear anything else about him not being able to be a number two on a championship caliber team. I don't want to hear it anymore. I just don't want to hear it anymore. Like, Giannis is clearly the best player on the team. Like, he's the engine that makes the car go, but like that's a huge game with major stakes to tie a series up going back to Phoenix and like pretty much neutralize the scoring outburst we saw from Devin Booker tonight. I don't want to hear a bad word about Chris. I guess I can't say that because, I mean, he's very prone to go like 3-13 in game five. But for now, I don't want to hear anything else about Chris Middleton. Give that man his flowers. All-star caliber player. Fringe All-NBA caliber player. Number two on the team that's in the finals right now just dropped 40 on one of the best defenses in the league. We're good. Chris Middleton's good. We ain't got to do this anymore.
How many shots did he take?
Enough to bring it home.
That's not a number.
You know what else isn't a number? The letter W. That's what Milwaukee got tonight.
33 shots, 40 points.
So more than a point per shot is what I'm hearing. That's pretty interesting to me. If you would like to provide analysis, I can pull up this true shooting calculator and pull that number up so we can have that on the pod as well. And is that what we need to do?
I'm just splicing into your ISO, that's all.
I see. We can do that, you know. There's nothing that we don't have bad words for Chris Middleton tonight. That's
Chris Middleton.
I'm not gonna let you bait me. No, you're not ruining this for me. You are not ruining this for me at all. We got a 40 ball in the finals from Chris Middleton.
I can tell the excitement in your voice. Hopefully you have not spilled all the juice that you have left, whatever's left of it. He had one of those nights, and it was very interesting at the start of the game. We talked about last pod, the Suns put two on the ball, and tonight they didn't. Start of the game, they said, hey, we're going to switch and live with whatever Chris Middleton does. Now, the adjustment that the Bucks made was, hey, we're just going to have Giannis screen for Middleton, and that will be a drop. And we know what Chris Middleton can do against a drop. So He was able to make those shots against the drop, also made the other Chris Middleton buckets, and he just made timely shots. I mean, his buckets down the stretch were huge. Bridges all over him, still found a spot and just kept making bucket after bucket. Kind of felt like it was flying under the radar. But just a heck of a night. I mean, this is what Chris Middleton can do offensively, and he made them pay.
That he did. How did you feel about Phoenix's defense overall? Because you mentioned at the top, like, they went away from putting two on the ball and going into the drop. Like, were you fine with that plan? Was that what you wanted to see heading into this one?
I mean, I thought their defense was better, especially in the first and the third. I thought they were physical. They were active. They weren't giving up exploits. They weren't putting two on the ball. They stayed out of rotation. The issue is they couldn't sustain it. You know, they had these great starts in the first and the third. Milwaukee was bogged down. Milwaukee couldn't find looks. They looked like the Milwaukee of the first two games. And then as it went on and Milwaukee made slight adjustments, they started to attack Phoenix's pressure points. And I'll give a salute to Budenholzer. It wasn't perfect, but he did get to the things he needed to get to offensively as far as putting pressure on Phoenix, you know, putting Chris Paul in pick and roll, going to the Giannis Middleton side pick and roll with an empty side when they know Ayton's going to be in a drop, taking away the strong side wing so that nail help that Phoenix had been showing isn't as present. Mm-hmm. So he did the little things that he needed to do. It wasn't perfect. I mean, we had too many times where Cam Johnson was guarding Giannis and Jrue Holiday was posting up. But they got to what they needed to get to. And so you got to salute Milwaukee for that. It wasn't necessarily a scheme deal for me from Phoenix. It was more just, it never felt like they could get into a rhythm. And that empty side pick and roll really hurt them because Ayton isn't a drop. There's no real help for the roll. And Middleton's right in his zone for a pull-up. So he's either too far back and giving up the pull up, or he comes up and the roll's wide open. And they just exploited that. They could have done it more than they did, but I was okay with Phoenix's defense. I thought they did enough, but they didn't have an answer for that action.
Yeah, like I'm glad you brought up the point about Milwaukee using Giannis more of a screener, and particularly the empty side actions, because I was a little bit concerned with their first quarter start. Like, they just could not get shots to go. And I remember midway through the first quarter, we get a Drew Giannis pick and roll with an empty side, but they had Giannis rolling towards the middle of the paint instead of towards the empty side. And I'm just like, oh, okay, it's going to be one of those games where things just don't make sense from Milwaukee's side. But to Bud's credit and to the point that you just made, like, there were adjustments being made. Kind of having a guy in the corner instead on the wing to kind of pull away that nail help was something that I noticed Phoenix did as well. And that helped free Devin Booker up for some of those pull-up jumpers that he made. And again, not enough can be said about the kind of night that he had on the offensive end. But I think my major takeaway from Milwaukee, like, I mean, obviously Chris Middleton made a bunch of jump shots and helped bring things home with the shot making that he had. But like, Milwaukee has just bludgeoned Phoenix inside over the past couple of games. Between just the rim attacks in transition, in the half court with some of the post-ups they're mixing in with Drew Holiday, with Giannis, and putting a guard on P.J. Tucker is almost becoming untenable at this point because of what he's doing on the offensive glass.
You mean sprint as hard as he can from the corner?
Yes.
Getting a lot done doing that.
Yeah, I mean, it's simple stuff. But like, on a night where Milwaukee was not super efficient from really anywhere, they took, just pulling up the box score, they took 97 shots. Phoenix took 78. Like, the offensive rebound battle once again swung wildly in their favor. So even when they didn't have things going, they got second and third chances on offensive possessions, which obviously helps. And I'll pose this question to you. How did you feel about the pace of this game?
In what way?
I guess more specifically, how did you feel about Phoenix's pace in this game? Because they looked a bit out of sorts.
Well, I mean, their pace was good to start the first and third, but as the game progressed, they couldn't sustain it. And that's the one thing that Milwaukee's physical defense has done. It's taken some things off the table for Phoenix, and it's gotten them out of sorts to where now they're fighting the shot clock in a way we haven't really seen them have to fight it. You know, the ball's higher on the floor. They're later to get into actions. They're not getting multiple actions out of it. You know, we talked about in game two how Phoenix was able to hurt Milwaukee with the play after the play. There's no play after the play in game four. They're up against the clock. They're trying to figure out how to get something going late because they're having to fight through and navigate screens. And now we have to set a pressure release screen before we set the pick and roll. And now Chris Paul's denied. So now we got to swing it to Ayton, to Crowder, to Chris Paul. Now there's 12 on the clock. Those kind of things have an impact over the course of the game. And that's where you have to salute Milwaukee for being able to sustain that defense and sustain that mindset and be physical, be active, and be disruptive. You know, to me, that's one of those things defensively where they had the anticipation, they reacted when they had to, but they were disruptive in that sense. And Phoenix has to find a way to get back to playing Phoenix Suns basketball. They showed they could do it. Mm-hmm. But again, it's been more flashes than sustaining it. And I think Devin Booker made a whole bunch of shots, but the process behind those, I don't know how much it helped Phoenix, mm-hmm. in the sense that you saw once he went down, they couldn't necessarily find the same rhythm because they weren't in rhythm. They were mm-hmm. finding a way, but they weren't in rhythm as a team. It wasn't total execution. It was Devin Booker making great plays, which can sustain you, and hopefully it'll be a bridge, but they didn't have Chris Paul going. They couldn't find an answer for what Milwaukee was doing defensively, and I'm sure we'll dig into that, but the tempo was off for me from Phoenix. When they were able to get stops, it looked a lot better. And when they were able to kind of come out and jump on them, it looked a lot better, but they never sustained it. So Milwaukee was able to stick around, get stops, score on the other end quickly, and then set their defense back up. And Phoenix has to get back to their rhythm.
Yeah, like for me watching Phoenix, it kind of oscillated between playing too fast and, to your point, getting later in the clock. Because to Milwaukee's credit, like them bringing that full quarter, three quarters court pressure after every inbound is grating. And it wears down a guy like Chris Paul, who just was not good tonight, to be frank about it. But again, it felt like it kind of
Chris Paul slander?
I mean, this was a game worthy of slander for him. Like the shot, you know, the missed shots are kind of whatever. But some of the turnovers, like, obviously, the last one's going to stick out where he just kind of trips and it leads to that fast break and Chris Middleton gets the bucket over Devin Booker. But, like, it's just some weird running high pick and roll stuff, just throwing the ball out of bounds, just missing guys. Like, that stuff is not Chris Paul. So, like, it just, he just didn't really bring it. on that end. And I'm not sure what the cause of it was. I mean, it could just be as simple as he had a bad night. And of course, that's, you know, further emphasized since this is a finals game and one in which Phoenix could have went up 3-1 if Paul was average tonight. But it may just be chalked up to a bad game, and you just have to wait and see how he responds in game five. But yeah, he left a lot on the table, both in terms of the shots that he missed. He was able to get to like the elbows pretty reasonably, particularly when Milwaukee had Bobby Portis in the game. They happened to drop those possessions with like Chris Paul and Torrey Craig running pick and roll together were interesting to me, because it kind of, I've talked about this on the pod before about how bad Bobby Portis looks in a drop generally. But like, it doesn't even really matter if Torrey Craig's your role man, because he's not really a role threat. Like, he's not a guy you're throwing the ball over the top to. You're not throwing him the pocket pass to finish at the rim. So it's just kind of like,
he had a couple finishes tonight.
He did, but like, he's not bending your defense. Like,
he's not, but he's someone who can roll who's not Frank Kaminsky.
Yeah.
That's a win for Phoenix.
Yeah. I'll give you that. Like, I mean, granted, if Frank Kaminsky is the bar, which he is right now because the Sarge injury, then that's going to be what it is. But
now you just taken out Frank Kaminsky every pod this week.
To be fair, Monty did too. So I
let
mean,
let me check his age real quick. Hold on.
I can't even tell you how old Frank Kaminsky was. The 2015 draft, I want to say. So I don't think he's going to hit like the 30 threshold. He's going to be like 28 or something, I would imagine.
28 years old. This does not track.
Yeah, see, there you go. But yeah, like I just had my brow raised with some of those pick and rolls, like using Torrey Craig. Like, it's, I mean, it just kind of speaks to what Phoenix doesn't have behind DeAndre Ayton, because like, he's the one guy that can kind of force some tags and force some rotations as a role man. And when he isn't in, like, Phoenix is still kind of scrambling for consistent answers. So that's odd to me. But yeah, like, I think it ultimately, in terms of Phoenix's pace, like, I think it begins with that full court pressure that Milwaukee's throwing in, because now it's either taking time off the clock or Phoenix is rushing into the first decent look they can get into because they're worried about Milwaukee being able to set their defense after that initial pressure. So I think big key for them heading into game five is trying to figure out some kind of middle ground. Like, they need to be able to beat that initial press and then get into their offense, and then they can get into those second actions if they need to, or even third actions if they need to. But they also can't just rush their shots, because Milwaukee ultimately wants to push a transition. So if they're in a situation where they're just taking the first decent look they get, they miss, and Giannis is grabbing the board and pushing and going, you can't set the wall. Giannis gets downhill. He's getting buckets and or getting to the free throw line, which is allowing Milwaukee to set their defense on the other end. And Phoenix is just kind of in this continuous loop. And you're relying on the kind of tough shot making that Devin Booker had tonight, which, to your point, like, he made a ton of shots, but Milwaukee was kind of fine with the type of shots he was making. Like, Pat Connaughton did a really good job on Devin Booker tonight. The scoreboard is not going to reflect that at all.
What?
But I think Connaughton defended him pretty well. Like, he made a bunch of tough shots over him.
He gave good effort. He did give good effort. I would not say he did a really good job. I don't think anyone did a really good job on Devin Booker tonight.
But I can rephrase. I think he did as good of a job as he could have, considering the difference in stature and stuff. But, like, I mean, he was there for a ton of the shots that Devin Booker made. I mean, Devin Booker's just bigger and better than him. So, like, I didn't feel like it was a case where Pat Connaughton's getting shook out of his shoe. Like, it wasn't the Pat Connaughton versus Trae Young matchup that we saw in East Conference Finals, where he just couldn't stay in front of him at all.
He was getting some buckets handed to him in the first half. But I see what you're trying to say.
Yeah, so that's where I'm at. Like, and even with that, like, it wasn't Milwaukee sending a ton of help. There were some random traps in the second half in particular. But for the most part, they kind of let him ISO and knock down tough shots. And I think Milwaukee's kind of okay with dealing with that. Where Milwaukee gets in trouble is when they're sending the extra attention, or even if you want to back that up, like, if they get a pick and roll with DeAndre Ayton and he's able to get a mismatch and they're trying to front him. There was a possession in the third quarter where you get a lift to the free throw line from Mikal Bridges and they set up another high low. But instead of making the pass, Bridges gets a pull-up jumper. Like, they have built-in advantages that way. But if it's just Devin Booker ISOing and just pounding the rock and knocking out tough shots. Like, from a process standpoint, I think Milwaukee's okay with that.
Yeah, but they carved Milwaukee up with the elbow action for Devin Booker. Didn't matter who was navigating the screens. PJ Drew, that becomes an interesting proposition, because now how do you handle that going forward? Do you end up putting two on the ball? Do you keep letting them navigate? If that becomes a shift, now Phoenix has something they can go to and open everything up. Mm-hmm. And you see there are people who wanted to trap both Devin Booker and Chris Paul. And if they can make enough shots to get that to happen, now it opens things up. Because every time they did send a double, exactly what Phoenix wanted. They hit the roller, defense help, bing, bang, bong, three-point shot. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting. But they needed to get Devin Booker going after the games he had, and they did succeed in doing that. The issue is they didn't do anything else around it. And, you know, even when Devin Booker had to go out with four fouls, they couldn't get back to executing. Chris Paul couldn't build the bridge offensively to kind of help that going. And that's tough. What do you think of Bobby Portis' switching? Because I thought Milwaukee did a couple things better defensively. Number one, before I get to Bobby Portis, Chris Paul could not get to his spots against Giannis. And that was different. It was like a drop late switch type deal where Giannis was right there and he was protecting that mid range. He was protecting against that pull up and Chris Paul couldn't get by him. There was no rhythm there. And then Bobby Portis was fighting when he was switching. I thought he was very active. So it was very interesting to see. Now, how do you get Chris Paul loose? He couldn't get the matchup against Connaughton. And when he did, didn't go great. Giannis made it tough. And Bobby Portis wasn't a total exploit. So now, where do you go? Interesting.
It's true. Like, I think, I mean, going back to game one, like, Chris Paul completely carved up with Bobby Portis in particular in space. Like, Bobby had nothing for him. So for him to bounce back in this game, fast forwarding up to the game tonight, like, and to hold his own in space, like, that's huge for Milwaukee. Like, again, I think switching, or just the late switch, the pill switch, is the way to go with Bobby Portis, because I just don't love him in a drop. Like, I just don't think he navigates that well. So for you to be able to simplify things there, just task him with keeping things in front, sending some nail help or some help from the wing, just some light stunts there when you can't afford to do so, also disrupts the rhythm of the ball handler, whether that's Chris Paul or that's Devin Booker when he got the switch or whatever. I think that's also helpful for him. Like, it's interesting that Bobby Portis is seeing the uptick in minutes that he is. Like, it's a testament to how well he's been able to hold up defensively. But how do you feel about the center dynamic for Milwaukee? Because been a lot of Giannis at the five. Like, Brook Lopez's minutes are continuing to dwindle. And I don't even feel like he's played poorly. I think it just feels like downside. Well, their version of downsizing with Giannis at the five has just become more fruitful than having Brook out there. How do you feel about that dynamic right now?
Well, I mean, I think there's still more they can get out of Brook. I wouldn't necessarily say he's been terrible or awful. I think he's done his job pretty well. Like we talked about before, I think offensively they just haven't really used him in any different way. So he's not really having that kind of impact. So when you see Pat Connaughton hitting shots and that allows you to play Giannis at the five, you probably lean on that. When you see the activity from Bobby Portis, especially in Milwaukee, with the way that the crowd enjoys his effort and gets behind him, you probably lean towards that. You know, I thought it was weird. I'm not in love with the double big minutes. Like, it always intrigues me. I don't hate playing two bigs against a small lineup, but I thought it gave Phoenix too much exploit wise. It's just, he's done his job, but it's clear unless he's hitting shots or crashing the glass, his impact is going to be what it is with how Phoenix is guarding him and how Milwaukee has their other lineups that they're going to. Did I get a fair enough?
No, no, you don't get a fair enough. Like, you've made very good points. Like, I'm just curious to see, like, if they're able to find a consistent role for Brook offense. I mean, he had an efficient 14 tonight, but I don't know. Like, I just wonder if they're going to try to fix that quote unquote problem, or if they're just going to continue to go that route with Giannis, with Bobby Portis. Maybe we see less of the double big looks if they are going to kind of phase Brook out a little bit. I'm just curious to see what Bud does with that. And again, like, I don't think Brook has been bad. Like, he's, when they've had him in the drop defensively, he's looked good. Like, he's shown comfort throughout this entire postseason run of playing a little closer to the level of the screen when necessary. So I don't think that's anything that he can't do offensively throughout this postseason run. Or, you know, throughout parts of the series, like, we've seen the value of him as a spacer. We've also seen the value of him with random post-ups or just random cuts and seals and kind of putting pressure on Phoenix in that way. So, like, there are avenues for him to be successful. But I'm just, you know, we're getting later into the series now. It's basically it's a 2 out of 3 exhibition for both of these teams now. So I just wonder how committed Bud is to trying to find something for Brook Lopez, or if he's just going to lean into what's already working.
I think we know he's going to lean into what's working.
It's the Bud special. Okay, we did talk about this on the last pod, but after 13-7-7 while also shooting 4-20 from the field, like, where are you with Drew Holiday?
I'm fine with Drew Holiday. I think he's had a lot of really, really, really good drives and no finishes with a lot of those, which makes it tough. I mean, they need his drives. They need his ability to stay aggressive, and he's staying aggressive. So he hasn't gotten timid. Obviously you want the production to follow, but the defense he's giving on the other end, extremely valuable, especially in this series with the way he's guarding Chris Paul. You can throw him on Devin Booker. So I think for him, he's just got to stay in the right mindset. He's got to stay aggressive, and hopefully these layups will start to fall, or maybe he'll start getting to the line. I think the post-ups, it's a little too much for me at times. I mean, you want to sprinkle them in, that's fine, but it feels like they go to it a lot more than I would with some of the options they have or some of the things they can run. But I'm not overly concerned because he's guarding his tail off on the other end. So, I mean, this guy gets something to fall. Like, he's so many strong drives, and it's just like, I don't know what's going on at the rim.
That's what's kind of throwing me for a loop because, like, I mean, he is providing plus value. I mean, the defense has just been incredible. Like, he has hounded Devin Booker. He has hounded Chris Paul. And he's probably the biggest reason Chris Paul has struggled. The biggest reason that Chris Paul struggled in Milwaukee over these couple of games, because he has just been in his hip. But I think it's just hard to get past the missed layups, missed jumpers or whatever, because, you know, Drew is kind of inconsistent as a shooter, particularly as a pull-up shooter. Like, that's the expectation that you have coming in. But I was looking at some of his rim numbers earlier tonight, and, like, just peeping Basketball Reference, like, he just shot a career high inside of 3 feet this season. Like, he's a career 61% guy inside of 3 feet. And he's at, I think, 62, or heading into the night, he was like 62% during the postseason run. So I just don't understand where the missed layups are coming from. And these aren't all trying to finish over DeAndre Ayton or stuff like that. Like, these are point blank misses at the rim. So you feel like that kind of stuff is correctable, but it also keeps happening. And, like, a guy as good as Drew is, like, a 4-15 clip on twos is not like him at all. So that's becoming a concern for me.
Because he had just some bizarre ones. I think he had one tip in where he crashed in the corner and it looked like it was going to be an easy, like, left hand off the glass. And it turned into a scoop. And he missed it. And I was like, what's going on right now? But no, I mean, that's one of those times where you got to take the good with the bad. You know, you need his playmaking. You need the assists. You need his pushing and transition. You need him to stay aggressive. And you hope that this will turn around. But, I mean, he's got to be Drew Hope-a-day.
I can't let that one slide in good conscience. I'm going to be honest with you. That didn't roll off the tongue at all. You couldn't have felt good about that one.
I was going to go Drew Hope-a-day, but I stuck with his name.
Hope-a-day probably would have been better. Like, that was I feel like that pun was a Drew layup, is what that felt like.
It's timely. I mean, sometimes you drive in the lane, you initiate contact, it's not there. You know, you post up, they pull the chair. You went for a big back down and now you're on the ground. Happens.
That is a fantastic transition to my DeAndre Ayton question. First and foremost, how do you feel about the switches against Ayton? Because I feel like Milwaukee hasn't really figured out. I think from a scheme perspective, they know what they want to do. But like the results haven't really been there from Milwaukee's side, I feel like. Because the fronting is just opening up those high lows when they have a guy relocate from the corner. And when they stay in front, they're switching a smaller guy on to Ayton, so he's able to get two jump hooks whenever he wants to. It's like, do you think they should consider doing anything differently? Was that a matter of, again, playing more Brook and trying to mirror the minutes there? Or like, how do you feel about what Milwaukee's doing in regards to Ayton?
I mean, they got the results they wanted in the last two games. Obviously, you don't want to give them dead set right in the middle of the floor seals against smaller guards, but making the adjustment to have PJ Tucker on certain guys when they start to attack it. So now he switches on him and now he's fighting, which, I mean, sometimes it's a front, sometimes it's just him being PJ Tucker getting in the way. Mm-hmm. Makes that different. So I thought Milwaukee did a good job doing that. I felt like every time it looked like Phoenix was about to exploit it, there was either a foul or they made an adjustment to try and take it away. So I think it's one of those things where we know that Ayton can hurt their switches. The question is, how concerned are you with it? And can he do it enough to make you make that switch? You know, if the idea is to hurt Chris Paul, you know, this is a conversation we had before. Do you value that more than allowing DeAndre Ayton to go off? Because if he's going off and the other guys are going off, then you're not doing anything. But if you're containing one portion and you might have to live with a few DeAndre Ayton post hooks, I mean, it's not the end of the world, depending on how it goes. But I mean, it hasn't been the same in Milwaukee for DeAndre Ayton, especially this game. It just felt like he never could get in a rhythm. So I just don't know how much, if you're Phoenix, you want to, how much they'll feed that. Mm-hmm. Because as we talked about their rhythm and their tempo, they've got to mix that in. I definitely will agree with that. But if that's the main focus, I don't want to say you're letting Milwaukee off the hook, but you're bogging yourself down a little bit at times, depending on how the game is going. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I got you. Like, I feel like that's certainly a tough balance to strike. Like, just watching the series, like, it just doesn't feel like, I just feel like on those possessions, like, Ayton has the edge almost every time, just based on the fronts. And the entry passing to him has generally been good. So it's basically been on Ayton to, you know, depending on how deeply he catches the ball, to just finish the play or work to finish the play. Like, there was a possession in this game where he ends up getting Pat Connaughton on the post up because of the switching. And he makes the shot, but it's like a 10-foot, 11-foot jump hook over Connaughton on the right block. And I'm just like, okay, like, Milwaukee's going to live with that 10 out of 10 times. Like, the fear in switching a smaller guy onto Ayton is that Ayton can just put him underneath the basket. And then it's either a really high percentage look or it's a foul. And with Connaughton already kind of filling the Dante DiVincenzo role, like, if a guy like Connaughton keeps getting caught on switches and he gets in foul trouble, the guard / wing depth for Milwaukee beyond their starters is just not there. So, you know, it's kind of on Ayton to punish that, but I don't know. Like, it's just been kind of an uncomfortable watch to me, I would say.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. I still think he's been very productive. I think you can mix in a few more slips, but I do think that the pressure from the Bucks has affected Ayton a little bit in his pick and roll, because you see how high he's having to set some of these screens at times. So you're not always able to get the clean switch or the clean roll that maybe you did in the first two games. So you wonder if he's able to maybe set it lower, but will that have more of an impact? Will that open more things up? Those kind of things. But I think there's ways to keep him going. It's just, he's got to be another addition attack wise. Like, I don't know if his scoring will lift it or carry them. Like, it would have been nice if they could have gone to him for a good stretch, mm-hmm. you know, when Booker was down or any of those times where they went cold. That'd be a good time to maybe get two or three in a row just to sustain and then play on the other end. But I'm not too concerned right now.
And other question I have for you in regards to Ayton, how did you feel about the Ayton versus Giannis possessions when we got him?
I think he's just has to do a better job of catching the drive. I thought he was active. I thought he got a few fouls just from not getting all the way vertical, his arms kind of going out instead of straight up. And then Giannis able to get to the post fade. But I thought he's been active, doing the best he can. I think sometimes in transition, there's some issues. I know when Giannis hit Connaughton on that 1-3 late in the game, Ayton was trying to kind of cross match and it didn't work out. And Connaughton was wide open. But I like the activity from Ayton. I don't feel like he's been a liability. I feel like it's been more Giannis being great this series than anything else.
Okay, I hear you.
Ooh, a replacement, folks. I hear ya. Yeah, you see the new swag. You see the new swag. You got a new tank top. Ooh, is that a I cannot name the company that is, but wow, that's a bold summer tank top, buddy.
Come on, man. I'm just relaxed.
Can't rock that in the streets.
Why can I not rock that in the streets? I didn't think the rep was that negative. Like it's fine. Like it's a fine sports apparel company, you know. Comfy gear. Ah. I get an effort. Okay, don't want to upset any potential sponsors, so we won't name the logo that's on the tank top right now. But I am surprised by your reaction. That's about as far as I'll go with that. It's funny, it feels like we haven't talked much about Giannis's game in particular. Like we started with the block and then talked about Ayton's defense on him. Are you concerned at all about... I guess Giannis's health first and foremost, but more specifically, are you concerned about the conditioning? Like, is that a thing that you, cause I've seen it kind of pop on the time, like he's getting these early rests, well, earlier than usual rests.
No, I'm not concerned. Man's okay. Knee bent in half and he came back to play basketball at an extremely high level. Mm-hmm. So if he's self-aware enough to be like, yo, can't breathe, take me out for a little bit. It's not the end of the world to me. It's not a big deal to me. He does look like he's breathing heavily at times, so I hope he's okay. But like, he looks fine.
Yeah, I think I'm just trying to balance. Like, again, he is coming off the injury. He does have a tremendous workload on both ends of the court, and also like, this is in terms of minutes, like the busiest like playoff run he's ever had. Like Bud has taken the reins off really for the first time in Giannis's postseason career. So it's been interesting to see him like fight through that. And, you know, to the point you just made, like he has been incredible all series long. He's been incredible all postseason long, but he has been freaking phenomenal in this final series. Just looking at his numbers now, 32 and a half points, 14 rebounds, 5.5 assists, nearly 2 steals and 2 blocks. Like, Giannis has to be the finals MVP front runner at this point, right?
Oh, yeah. If the Bucks win, it has to be Giannis. Sorry, Chris. Has to go that way. And to update my finals MVP rankings, if the Suns do pull this out, Devin Booker has snatched that after that game. Put a stamp on it.
So from the Suns side, you would have Booker, Ayton, Paul as your top three?
Yeah.
Okay.
Bucks, it's Giannis, Chris.
And then that's just, yeah. Pat Connaughton at three.
Thanasis.
Oh, okay. Teammate of the finals.
Wow. Slander.
How's that slander? You've complimented him being a great teammate. So I also compliment him and it gets dubbed as slander from my end. That's not fair to me at all.
Life isn't fair, man.
Wow. Okay. You know what? I'll let you have that. Not sure how I feel about that, but it's fine. One last question and we can go off the game for talk. Quiet game from Mikal Bridges offensively. Like, do you see outside of like those flashes from the corner on those Ayton slips, like do you see other avenues for Phoenix to get him involved? Because I think a lot of Milwaukee switching is taking away some of the cuts that he would normally get in the half court.
Not just the cuts, but any of the extra pass plays. You know, he made a living this season punishing teams that run rotation, and there's not a ton of rotation right now. So he's in scenarios where he has to create his own. I mean, I think you could possibly run him off maybe some handoffs try and get him some movement. But that's part of, you know, where Phoenix is later in the clock. So it's harder to necessarily get to him when you're just getting to CP3 or Devin Booker with 10 or 12 on the clock. So I think he's got to get himself going in transition. We know the cutting works in the half court, especially if they're posting or, you know, the Bucks are fronting. But I think maybe get him a couple handoffs and hopefully you can find a way to get the Bucks in rotation, get us some drive and kick that way. I think honestly, drive and kick might be the best way for him, just to get something where the ball's coming to him off of something other than just a regular swing. You know, he's not at that level yet offensively. So I think they've got to get him in rhythm because he's just so important. We've seen what he does and what they look like when he's scoring the ball and making defenses pay. We also seen, you know, they tend to struggle when he scores in single digits. So that's kind of why I asked, what's more important, his offense or his defense? You know, you need his defense, but you also need him to contribute on the other end. And, you know, when him and Crowder aren't necessarily able to get it going, you know, I mean, Bridges only took four shots, so yeah, he's going to have to be aggressive and look to make an impact. You know, when the ball comes to him, put it on the floor one time, make a quick decision, see what you can get out of it, and play from there.
Do you think Phoenix can afford more campaign minutes? Not campaign minutes, Cam Johnson minutes.
It should. This man Cam Johnson is losing his mind. The new Danny Green. This man has made himself some money.
Yeah, she's
if Phoenix had pulled that out, his block would have been the one.
Yeah.
That was a big block. But they didn't win, so it'll go down in the forgotten basketball place.
Be in the archive somewhere.
Well, I think he's held his own. And I think he's been able to play with some different lineups, guard some different guys, and not get played off the floor, which is key. I think the biggest thing is, who do you play him with? How long do you give him a run? Because do you risk him becoming, I guess, not a liability, but getting attacked? Mm-hmm. And now you can't go back to him because now you know they're going to go after him. So it's kind of like one of those things. But I think his minutes have been really good, and I think he's proven a lot this postseason.
He's been really good.
No Cam traction.
So now I'm torn because I could either end on that or I could counter with like the Jeff T question that I have percolating right now. So I don't know which one I want to what I want to do. You know what? I'll be nice. We can end the pod there.
Nope. What's the Jeff T question? I'm dying to hear it.
-3 in 11 minutes. What are your thoughts?
He didn't play good. I don't have a Jeff T soliloquy. Post game four. What were you expecting there, buddy? What fireworks show were you expecting?
All I wanted was a sigh and a head shake. That's all I needed. That would have made the question it for me.
Oh, my bad.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
Now, is this a series now to you?
Oh, yeah, this is 2-2. But no, like if on a more serious note, like the rim issue, the paint issue, I would just say, like Milwaukee has dominated the paint in these two games in a way that has me sweating for Phoenix at this point. Because Ayton's the only guy that can provide like real size and real impact down low. And when he isn't on the court, just because of the substitution pattern or if he does get in foul trouble, like Phoenix just doesn't have another option. And so if Milwaukee continues to get to the paint, get rim attempts, get free throw attempts, and also just crush it on the offensive glass, like at a certain point, like Devin Booker dropped 42 tonight and they lost. So Milwaukee winning the possession battle like this is wildly important. And like none of that part of it seems unsustainable. Like I think they're always going to have more size. They're going to be able to crash the offensive glass. Just even looking at the starting lineup, if you're putting Chris Paul on PJ Tucker to save him, like Tucker's going to be able to run in and get offensive boards or draw cheap fouls underneath. So like they have built in avenues to win the possession battle. Again, you know, the trend throughout this postseason for Milwaukee, like sometimes they get in their own way about solving problems, but like they're getting a lot of cracks at it because of these extra possessions. So if Phoenix doesn't have a counter to that, then it gets kind of tough.
That's very interesting. As you finish your Chris Aid over there, I do think that, and this is no disrespect to a Bucks team that gutted a game out that they needed to get. I mean, the fact that they were only down by three after that first quarter where they shot 29% and Phoenix was rolling was a W. But I do wonder that their margin for error is small. Like if one thing slips, this goes different. Like if their defense doesn't hold up or if they aren't able to get into the paint or maybe Chris Middleton's shots aren't falling, any of those things could swing it, and they have to take what they did in these two games and travel with that on the road against a frenzied Phoenix crowd. That's where it gets interesting. Can you make the same shots? Will you have the same level of defense? And that's where it's kind of like Milwaukee. Again, I respect them for what they've done and I'm impressed by what they've done, but they now have to do it two more times. That is a hard style to play. That is not an easy way to win. And, you know, we've talked about Phoenix having to get back to doing what they do. You know, you've seen Monty Williams on the broadcast begging his guys to play harder, saying they need to get back to doing what they do, play with their force on both ends of the floor. And if Phoenix can just do that, we saw it in the first and third quarter, looks a little different. But Milwaukee absolutely has a path to victory now, which they did not two games ago. The defense holds up. Their style of play offensively, they get in their own way too much, but it is something where we're going to figure out how to score some points. You got to deal with this. You got to deal with Chris. You got to deal with Giannis. We're going to find a way to get enough buckets. Mm-hmm. So that'll be interesting to see. Pat Connaughton, put some respect on his name.
There we go. And like to the Milwaukee point, like it's encouraging that, you know, Giannis has the back-to-back 40-point games. Chris Middleton in particular was underwhelming offensively during that stretch, to be kind. And then Giannis falls from the 40-point level, still has a very good night. And Chris kind of picks up that drop-off from Giannis and drops 40. So, like, if they can just find it elsewhere, I mean, the fact that they were able to kind of find it elsewhere tonight, I think is encouraging. The defense has looked pretty good overall. Not even pretty good. Defense has been very good overall. Like, there was, you know, you get your handful of slip-ups. Like, there was a Spain pick-and-roll possession from Phoenix in the second quarter, where Cam Johnson shakes loose for a free throw line jumper because they botched the second switch. But like in a vacuum, like the scheme is very clear. Like they're going to pressure. If there's a pick and roll, then Drew Holiday in particular is defending. Like he's going to fight over screen. It's not going to be an easy switch. Like they know what they're doing against DeAndre Ayton and how they want to defend that. Phoenix has counters to that. But from a scheme perspective, Milwaukee seems pretty locked in to what they want to do. And the effort level has been there all series long. So I don't anticipate that slipping. It's really just going to come down to the offense. And if they can just keep finding ways to piece it around Giannis, like they should be in pretty decent shape.
Nah, I agree. Where is, how do you spell Devin Booker's name, by the way?
Look, man, I have big thumbs. Like that's just what it is. It's D-E-V-I-N. And this is the second time this postseason I had the O instead of the I. And I'm just like, this is not great.
I'm not doing the hashtag big thumbs, just so you know.
I will create the hashtag for myself. Like that's not intentional at all.
We're not doing that, sir. How late are you going to stay up because Chris Middleton scored 40? Are you going to rewatch the game?
Probably, but, you know, I want to be prepared for this fine podcast that we do here. Speaking of which, thank you for listening to another episode of the Dunker Spot.
I had one question. Oh. Sorry. Didn't mean to interrupt. I know you're in rhythm. How was KZ Akpala's defense in the last Nigeria game?
Now you want to talk about KZ Akpala.
I was just asking.
We want to talk about KZ now.
I was just asking a question.
No, when I give KZ praise, it's, you know, okay. I see what we're doing here. The agenda is agending. No, this is not going to turn into a KZ Akpala slander pod. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Dunker Spot. If you have not, please subscribe to us. We're on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts. We are there. You can follow me on Twitter at NakaiasNBA. You can find Steve and his KZ Akpala hater tweets at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all later.
What a plug.